You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM.
So we'll jump gears then, and let's look forward, because we have a major problem in the United States. And with the government itself in terms of cybersecurity, we are a bit of a confederacy. A lot of different government agencies and departments have different standards, even though they have very similar compliances. Recently there was a case of the USGS, US Geological Service, basically getting shut down with Russian malware, and it had nothing to do with the Russians. It was some guy going to adult websites that was getting everything infected, and he was bringing in a flash drive and all that. But what I want to talk to you about is, we have for the next 100 plus years, as long as this country is going to be surviving, we're going to have elections. And our elections are increasingly more electronic. And while it's confederated, some of us punch a hole or draw a line, some of us tap a screen, because you deal on the hardware side, and we've seen very easy hacks and identification of how to break into these things at conferences like Black Hat and RSA, What does the future for election security look like in the United States when, you're dealing with infecting hardware? How easy would it be to do that? And how would we defend the United States in an election to ensure it? And obviously there are different things like information campaigns and all that, but the actual voting process itself, how are we as a nation going to move forward and secure that at the hardware level?
Well, it's a wonderful questions with a very complex answer. We are dealing with that too little, I think, and not just as a company, but as a society. And I would assume, and it's a educated guess, I guess, that governments from outside the U.S. would and are manipulating our voting results because it's so easy to do it.
It is.
Some of these machines are, created in the 80s or early 90s, and there is no security in mind in these computers eventually. And some of them are not even patched, that's on the software side, to the recent OSs. But all of them in common, I would say, have external interfaces that can easily manipulate it. And one interesting thing, I was looking into that in more details around the beginning of 2018 for a cause, and a voting machine and in some aspects, ATM machines, I'm sorry for taking you out of that, are very much in common in terms of vulnerabilities, especially on the hardware side.
Yeah.
Eventually, you have some device that was crafted outside by there's a computer, some kind of a sort of an input device, regardless if it's a card reader or a keyboard, some custom keyboard, and other maybe custom input devices, but eventually all of them are connected to a centralized location. And regardless how good it is encrypted, and I doubt that also, especially with the old machines, if any, but regardless how good is the encryption, eventually these lines are exposed for physical manipulation, physical layer manipulation. I don't want to be too techy, but it's really relatively easy to penetrate a network and even manipulate data or perform a denial of service or selective denial of service attack by actually looking on the physical layer of a network. And while all of these states eventually that are responsible for maintaining these voting machines are doing a bit of a work on that, I don't think they look on the big picture and understand the threat, especially in a public places that there are at minimum dozens of thousands of people that has a physical access to that equipment.
Right.
And that's a concern.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, and it's something that, we've brought up. I don't know if I actually write articles for Forbes and all that, and I've brought up, you know, election hacking. Interestingly enough, and on a complete aside, and probably three of my viewers are going to know this, but we've actually run into ATMs when we are doing work with banks that are running OS 2, specifically because they believe that nobody's going to know how to write an infection for the damn thing, you know, because it's an old operating system from IBM that is now defunct. Well, yeah.
There are crazy attackers that have enough information about that. Yeah. Right. And by the way, the Secret Service just recently, a few months ago, released a note to all of us actually about ATM jackpotting. And yeah. That's something that actually we are chasing all around the world. And we, in many cases, see manipulated hardware devices. And I'm not talking about the simple skimmers that are put in front of the ATM. I'm talking about a much more sophisticated attacks, even though it's off-the-shelf tools. Off-the-shelf darknet tools, but right. That allow attackers eventually to get into that network of ATMs and jackpot money out of ATM by connecting some simple device from outside.
Yeah, it's nonstop. What never ceases to amaze me, especially on the hacking side, is just the innovation, just the way people are finding ways around the standard defenses, and it's perpetually cat and mouse. You know, we get into a compromised client, we figure out what went on, we plug the holes, we build defenses, and then we're just waiting for that person to innovate around, whether it's a government agency or it's that 15-year-old kid with a laptop and a, you know, and just an insane amount of knowledge. And yeah, it's nonstop. But on the hardware side, it's just really interesting because we have this expanding need for bandwidth, this expanding need for use, our cloud storage. I read an article recently that Microsoft is ripping out servers, you know, at a rate of something like every 6 months at data centers to keep up with the increase that Azure needs for hard drive space and all of this. And by virtue of that, I have to imagine it would be very easy and lucrative for either a criminal element or a state-sponsored hacking division to want to infiltrate and break in the most easy way. You know, and then on top of it, we've got organizations like WikiLeaks that are dumping locations of like every Amazon data center, which just happened. You know, I want to say about a month ago, they got an old document and they put it out there. And so if we're looking at this moving forward, if we're looking at our intellectual property and one of the largest wealth transfers in history is going on right now of stolen US intellectual property moving to Asia, you know, what does it look like in terms of defense? We have no real compliant law here. We're a complete patchwork of various compliances, and a lot of us adhere to specific frameworks like NIST or, you know, CSA for the cloud and all that. But what does it look like from a hardware side when, you know, I am a Microsoft, for example, and I have, you know, a million servers worldwide sitting in data centers? You know, how am I going to understand from your perspective if I've got, like, let's say five servers of that million acting as exfiltration tools for a government or hackers or the mafia or, you know, whatever it is? How do they defend against that?
Well, let's start by understanding the anomaly in the market. Okay. You know, every number wins between $100 to $200 billion on cyber spend. Everyone has his own magic number, but who right. cares what is the real number? How much out of that is going to secure hardware? One crumb, two crumbs, nothing.
Yeah, I'd say where I see most of the spending happen is on perimeter defense as well as monitoring tools for
which
the perimeter.
Which means that we actually almost beg to these attackers to use hardware as an attack tool.
Yeah, well, it's a very easy way, as you just explained. But how's a Microsoft going to know, I guess? You know, they've got using easy numbers, they're in 100 data centers worldwide, and we know that's more, way more. But it's 100 data centers, and they've got like three machines in 100 data centers that are infected, whether it's a mouse, an integration into a network card, a cable, a motherboard. Like, how do we holistically, and I understand it's hard to do that, how do we verify that everything we're plugging in is legit? Or the server that we're pulling out of the box, how do we know that is not infected because it's, you know, somebody hit it in the supply chain?
Well, I don't know anything about, you know, the way Microsoft is doing, and I'm not
a generic company.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you know. I don't want to talk about specific customers, but
of course, names.
I would say that if you are running a large array of data centers. You are, as you mentioned, you have million computers and you have millions of Ethernet ports and you have millions of devices around them. It's not just the servers.
Right.
The critical infrastructure around that, the ICS systems around that. It's really, really hard eventually to monitor everything, but they do. They do monitor everything in terms of the health of the network. They do monitor everything in the terms of securing the network from in and from outside. I think what these companies need to have is first a roadmap on how to secure their servers. Now, Microsoft is a great example, although Google are doing the same. They have, and it's not a secret, it's in the public knowledge, a secured server plans. They publish, especially Google has their own, I don't remember names, but these companies has a knowledge and awareness about the need for a secured server platform. So they understand that, but it's a long roadmap in order to achieve that. And in any case, this is going to secure the server machine. But eventually, they have Ethernet switches, they have network devices, and they have applications that run. So they secure the applications. They may secure the network from outside and maybe inside, but they don't secure, as I understand at least, as I know, none of them. Well, none of them works with me, so I know that none of them secures the physical layer of the network. And that's a concern that needs to be addressed. On the hardware side, they need to look and understand where is the pain point and protect against them. Peripherals, networking equipment, and so on and so on and so on. And this is where we try to help them to start by a roadmap and a plan before running and implementing.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's a good point. And I'm speaking more generically. I'm saying Microsoft because they were not mentioned in anything previously public, you know, that you've been mentioned in. But yeah,
I think they're the only ones that were not mentioned. Maybe they're the best.
Right. If anything, that's a feather in their cap. That's a check mark on the good side. But the point that I'm getting at is, yeah, I mean, we've both been in secure SOCs. We've both seen, you know, just the level of detail and attention that these companies take when they are ordering, when they are installing, when they are designing, building everything from the infrastructure to the cybersecurity side. But when we are dealing with something like a supply chain hacking and you are ordering, you know, your server from whoever your manufacturer is and you're pulling it out of the box, the assumption is that the manufacturer is taking that same level, that same care, that same, you know, process. And so if I'm looking at this and I've got an influx of 1,000 servers that I need to spin up in, let's say, 2 weeks into my network, am I sitting there with a diagram making sure that there's no processor with the size of a grain of rice on it that's out of place? You know, it makes it very difficult because there has at some point going to be a human process. We can go through and use hardware and software tools to scan, to find all of this, but at the end of the day, there may be just us putting eyeballs on a device or a server or whatever that is to just really understand what it's doing.
I had a interesting conversation with one of the server vendors, not the ones that are in the news right now, and just recently, and the reaction to the Bloomberg story, and I'm not going to talk about that specifically, but the reaction was, it's impossible. And my question to them was, do you have any open connector on your board? Is that open connector would give me, as an attacker, an access to the network and or to the CPU or, I don't want to be too specific. I'm
right.
Being very, very global.
I understand.
And third, if so, can I open your box without being caught? And if the answer is yes, yes, and yes, I think potentially you have a problem. Now, server equals Ethernet switch, equals printer, equals barcode scanner, and we're not going to mention the mouse again, but all of these devices suffer from the same vulnerability, okay? So issue is that in most cases, there is no security in mind when we designed, we as a society, when we designed these devices. Now, we wanted them to be generic. We wanted them to be open, open platforms. Mm-hmm. We wanted them to be flexible. And by doing that, which is a necessity, we also opened the door for abuse by using these openness connections. And, you know, I remember, and there is a blog that I released a couple of years ago about USB, which is fundamentally broken because of the usability of it. So, yes, we need USB. Yes, we are enjoying the ability to connect whatever we want, but we actually pay a price in terms of security. Exactly like we pay a price in terms of security in networking, in Ethernet, and exactly like we pay a price by an open platform hardware.
Yeah.
So can we do something? Absolutely, we can do a lot. Right. But we still start by facing the problem.
Right. Well, and what you just said actually opens up a greater can of worms. So I wrote an article called The Five Laws of Cybersecurity. And law number one is, if there's a vulnerability, it will be exploited, right? Mm. And I mean, it's just obvious, right? And law number two is everything is vulnerable in some way, you know, even if we haven't discovered it. But I'm taking your logic and I'm applying it to pretty much everything. So we don't even have to look at the hardware level to see examples of the openness. So USB, which is a great example of that, you know, is very open. It's universal, literally universal. And then we look at other platforms that can get people in trouble. Just outside of hardware and software, like Facebook, like social media, where we can see people abuse what is essentially an open system to deliver disinformation at the human level, not necessarily at the hardware or software layer. So it's absolutely fascinating. And Yossi, first, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me here. I'm looking at the time
and I'm
gonna have to wrap this up a little bit, but if people want to get a hold of you, if they're an enterprise customer that is watching this, and I know I've got a few that watch my videos, how can they get a hold of you?
Sepio.systems, easy.
Sepio.
There's a contact us form there, easy. We get many, many submissions every week. We respond to everyone. So just Great. Send us a query.
So
no quotes, just ask questions.
Sepio.systems. Sepio.systems. Okay. And this has been Yossi Appelbaum. I'll give you the final word. Do you want anything or want anything? Do you have anything to say or do you want to say anything is what I meant.
Yeah. Just very short sentence. There is a threat. We need to understand it and then we need to mitigate it. But let's start by understanding there is a threat and pushbacks don't help anyone, especially not forgetting security.
Absolutely. I completely agree. And Yossi, again, thank you very much for taking the time to speak
thank
with
you
me today. And to all you guys out there, thank you very much for watching or listening or however it is. And as always, stay safe and stay online. Thanks, guys.
You're listening to Nick Espinoza here on the Deep Dive Radio Show on Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP, on 101.5 FM. And now for breaches of the week. And if you have a data breach to report that's local to you or the major news might have missed it, please, by all means, send it to me. And I'm glad to give you a shout out and include it in the radio show and possibly a daily video. And you can find me on Twitter and Facebook at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can email questions at securityfanatics.com. Again, that's questions at securityfanatics.com. And I'm more than happy to include your data breach and give you a shout out on the air. With that, let's begin. And these last couple of weeks have had quite a lot of breaches. I mean, we just, it's on and on. Like, I don't think there's ever going to be a radio show that I don't have a laundry list of breaches to talk about. So with that said, the first one we're going to be talking about is Austral. Now, if you're not familiar with Austral, this is an Australian company, and they are a major defense contractor. Now, they have defense contracts, not just with the Australian military, but also the U.S. military as well, including the U.S. Navy. Now, they just had, or rather declared, a massive breach of their data management system by unknown actors. Now, obviously, the fear is that you know, any intellectual property that might belong to them that is, let's say, in support of either the Australian or U.S. militaries or any other contracts might have been hit. And so obviously we are definitely hoping that that was not state sponsored, because, you know, that would not be good if the Chinese or the North Koreans or somebody else was hacking in. And so that is your defense contractor news in terms of breaches there. Now, moving on to Eurostar, this is Europe's railway system. They just reset thousands of passwords for thousands of customers when they noticed in their networks that a whole bunch of fraudulent attempts were happening of people trying to log in. And so they suspect that hackers had basically hacked in, got usernames and passwords, and were attempting to log into that network. So Eurostar reset passwords pretty much across the board for that. And if you're using Eurostar, I'm sure you've had to change your password at this point. Moving on, we're going to be talking about FIFA. Now, if you're not familiar with FIFA, they are the governing body of soccer worldwide. They're the ones that throw the World Cup, you know, and pretty much they set the rules and standards for soccer worldwide. They just declared their second breach of the year. So they've kind of been through the ringer, I guess. So their second breach of the year. Now, this came through a phishing campaign, an email phishing campaign that exposed personal information, you know, for the FIFA organization. Now, FIFA has not disclosed the extent of the damage here or the extent of what was lost, stolen, accessed, etc. But they have, per compliance law, declared that they have been breached again. Moving on, we're going to be talking about Radisson Hotels. I'm sure some of us or most of us have at some point in our lives have stayed at a Radisson Hotel. They just declared a massive data breach. Now, this included names, email addresses, actual addresses, rewards numbers, if you're a Radisson Rewards member or whatever their program is called. And basically, they had this attack going on for about 3 weeks or so. They traced it back. It started actually in September 11th, and their IT department caught it on October 1st and was then able to shut it down. So 3 weeks of being able to infiltrate a system and move data out is not a good sign for anybody, because hackers can move data pretty quickly and also at off hours and all of this. And so if anything, it kind of underscores the need to make sure that we have live remote monitoring of our secure networks. So let's keep on going. We're going to head on back to Europe, and we're going to be talking about an organization called Ingerop. Now, I believe Ingerop is a French design firm. They are in France. Now, they got hit, and hackers stole 65 gigabytes of data from them, which is absolutely huge. But the scary part about Ingerop is that part of the data that was stolen was designs for nuclear power plants in France. And I don't know if there are other nuclear power plants, like these designs have been used in America or elsewhere in the world, but I mean, that's a serious issue, especially if it's a group like ISIS or Al-Qaeda or even a state-sponsored actor that wants to threaten France. That's a serious, serious problem. And so Ingerop has plugged the hole, but the damage has already been done. We'll bring it back here to Silicon Valley and talk about Facebook for a little bit. Basically, it was discovered on the dark web that hackers were selling 81,000 accounts information. Now, this is not the normal thing that we see like on identity theft forums and hacker breaches in the dark web when we're doing research. For that, it's usually I have, you know, 81,000 usernames and passwords and all of that. But what the hackers were selling in this instance, interestingly enough, was personal messages. And so if you've been sitting there with your girlfriend or boyfriend or spouse or loved ones or mistress even, and communicating via Facebook Messenger, these hackers grabbed it for 81,000 people and are selling it on the dark web. And they are offering some of the communication as proof that they have all of this communication. Now, hackers could take this, use it for ransom against you. So let's say you're, you know, John Smith or whatever, and you got caught up in this. They could basically go to your account and say, here's a screenshot of, you know, the messages you've been sending to somebody you shouldn't have been sending them to, and I want money from you. And so that is a serious problem if you are one of those 81,000 people. I mean, it's, you know, privacy is hard to come by. Let's keep going around the world. HSBC, which is global but based in Hong Kong, they have declared that roughly 1% of their U.S.-based customers may have been breached. This includes account info, birth dates, et cetera, et cetera. Now, you might be thinking, okay, 1% of, you know, their customer base may not be big, but HSBC is one of the largest, if not the largest bank on the planet and own a lot of sub brands. So 1% could really add up to be a lot of people. And so if you have any HSBC ties, products, etc., that may be something you want to look into. Coming more close to home, we're going to be talking about the Great White North in Ontario, Canada. Now, there is a company there called Ontario Cannabis Store, and you can do the math on what they do for a living. They recently updated their website to improve the tracking feature. So if you order something from the Ontario Cannabis Store, it's going to go through Canada Post, which is the national mail system for Canada. And basically what ended up happening is there was a flaw in the tracking system that they had updated, and it's more on the Canada Post side from everything that I've read, but this is the first one to declare a breach, and roughly 4,500 people that use the Ontario Cannabis Store have had their personal information compromised by virtue of this flawed tracking system. And so that is what it is, I guess. Moving on, we're going to keep it still in the former British Empire here. We're going to be talking about Australia. Now, I don't know if you guys remember, but back in February, Under Armour basically declared a breach of their data app, like the app that you can download for fitness and all of that. And it was a massive breach. It was 150 million people worldwide. This included Australians, about 4 million Australians or so. Here's the thing. It doesn't seem like Australia really got the memo until the last couple of weeks, and it's been like 10 months. And so now we are starting to see Australian news organizations report that 4 million Aussies were caught up in this. And, you know, Australia, man, we love you guys. We really do. But let's keep up with the news here because, you know, it's obviously important for our own safety and protection. And honestly, I love your country, but we definitely got to keep up with the news. And thank you so much for tuning in this week. It was another fun show, and I think we covered a lot of really good stuff, and I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. It was a really good time, and I hope you keep tuning in. Thank you very much for listening to the Deep Dive Radio Show here with Nick Espinoza. And if you have any comments, suggestions, questions, absolutely anything, once again, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. And you can always send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. Don't be shy. I love the feedback. We've been having a great time with the show. And as always, stay safe and stay online, everyone. Thanks for listening.